Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and we are, Rob and I are here alone for the first part of the show. Our guest is going to join us in about 30 minutes or so. So we'll have Chris on. We'll introduce her when she comes on a little later. But good morning, Rob. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. I'm down in LA. As you can see, a little different background. This is my office down at Podcast One. And I'm calling in from down here because I'm attending the LA Podfest here over the weekend. It started last night. Pretty amazing event. I wouldn't say it was massively attended, but I'd say that there was probably just last night there was probably maybe 800 to 1,000 people there. So there's some great sessions, you know, like Mark Maron and Aisha Tyler and a bunch of podcasters doing it live and doing video and audio at this event. And it's in a fantastic Beverly Hills hotel, so it's really gone upscale. So it's an exciting time for podcasting, and we'll definitely talk about more about that.
Well, cool. And I have to mention, though, Rob, you need some pictures or something there in the office. It's pretty sterile. It looks like you're in a hospital room.
Yeah, well, it is kind of a white environment. No question about that. We definitely are focused on the work, not on the decor. Though, if I took you a tour of the rest of the office, it's full of gigantic photos of the LA Lakers because of Norm Pattiz, who's a huge fan of the Lakers. So the rest of the office is pretty decorated, but my office is pretty stark. It's just full of tech and podcast work.
Well, I have to bring you something for the wall next time I come down there.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, anyway, cool. Hey, so, you know, we definitely want to talk about what's going on with LA Podfest, but I do want to talk just about a couple of things that are literally in the news this week in the new media space. And one of those items is the suspension of Bill Simmons on the BS report over to ESPN. And pretty big podcast, pretty big suspension, 3 weeks. I think this is a first. By the way, we can't get suspended on this show.
We can say whatever we want unless we actually play a YouTube video, then we get...
Yeah, then we get dinked. So what do you think about this suspension? You know, I don't care about the particulars, but... this is kind of an interesting move, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, these kind of things are going to happen when broadcasters get a little controversial and start saying things that maybe they regret later. This has been going on radio for a long time. So in some ways, it's a good sign that a podcaster kind of gets called out for something.
Oh, you think it's a good thing that he got called out?
Well, you know, no, it just drives a lot of attention. So,
well, that's true. I think it's interesting. Gave him a 3-week suspension. They could have fired him, but they didn't. Yeah. But he almost, you know, he did the number one thing you don't do when you have a boss is call the boss out.
Yeah,
and if he would have just voiced his opinion versus having, versus then following it up with a. You know, if my boss, you know, I go ahead, dare him to suspend me or, you know, whatever. And they did. So the last thing you want to do is call your boss out. He may have got away with it if he hadn't said that. I don't know.
Well, I think that the only reason he's going to probably get away with it is because, you know, he was getting some attention for them. And I don't know. I mean, I think talking about the NFL, it was pretty bold of him to say what he said about the commissioner. So,
well, you know, and the thing is, sports guys are, you know, that's what they do. And, and so I don't know why ESPN's really surprised that, he's been outspoken in the past. So yeah, it's an interesting, thing, but I think this is the first time we've ever had a podcaster actually get suspended from his show. Yeah. A pure podcast show, I per se, not a radio show. But additionally, in the news this week, there was two articles. One came out in the Washington Post, which myself and, of course, Norm over there at your company was interviewed along with some other folks. But I had high hopes for this particular article. And I spent quite a bit of time on the phone with a reporter. I got quoted once. So, it's just kind of like, that's how it kind of goes sometimes. But it is an interesting report, and I think she didn't fully understand the podcasting space, but I think anytime there's coverage is good. What any thoughts on the article itself yourself?
Well, I mean, I've been putting out on Twitter that I thought that there was a this is like deja vu, because we've seen this so many times over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, where the journalists, each time one of these articles comes out, it's a new journalist, right? And they all think that the space is brand new and that things are all of a sudden happening now, And I think a lot of folks in the podcast community, I've heard a lot of people comment about this, is that, podcasting has been a steady growth, and sure, the audience is getting bigger and more people are making money from podcasts, but it's been a steady climb. It isn't like all of a sudden today the Washington Post says that podcasting is now profitable and people are making money at it. Though I'd say I agree 100% with you that I think that it's good that an article like that comes out. I mean, our phones were ringing off the hook and our emails were fairly hot on Friday from that article.
Yep.
People wanting to get shows on Podcast One, and people are interested in the space, and it was timed really, really good for LA Podfest, I think.
And another thing too is I think there's obviously some podcasters that got their PR machine they're calling in favors with reporters they need, they know. Trying to get trying to get print and get exposure. So it is an interesting time in the space in that regard. There was another article over on Fast Company, which really to me looked to me like someone did a friend a favor in posting it. And the thing is, I just kind of read some of these and I told the Washington Post reporter that there are. Profitability in podcasting is not necessarily tied 100% to comedy, because comedy is actually the most under advertised medium in the space. It's mostly the tech and business, and that's where the money's been for many, many years. But
and comedy has always been rather blue, as far as the content, and I know we're involved in a few comedy podcasts, and it's. Sometimes it can be hard to sell advertising for those shows.
Very
because
hard.
The advertisers want to have safe content. And a lot of these shows, and last night at the LA Podfest was a classic example. A lot of those shows were like, most brand advertisers would not want to even come within, 1,000 feet of those shows. So it was, but those shows are really funny and they're popular, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be easily monetized.
And it's funny that she says podcasts are back and making money on the Washington Post side, because the last time I check, we've been writing checks for 10 years now. Actually not 10 years, but 9 years. So
Todd, you and I are a little jaded about this.
Yeah, that's true.
I was talking to this about it, with a few people that are new to the space last night, and it's like, you have to understand, when I see this, this is like the fifth time I've seen this.
Right.
For you, you've only been in the space for maybe a year or two. This is something all hot and new.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of a reflection of how that's impacting the medium right now. People are getting spun up and excited about it because these big media companies are starting to sit up and take notice of it all of a sudden. And I think there's a lot of reason for that, but it's just something we've seen many times before come and go, and we're just a little cynical.
and I also laughed in one article where one guy said, I spent $3,000 on my, he's basically talking about how much money, he talked to his wife, how much money he'd spent on his studio. And the average podcaster does not, especially audio podcaster, does not spend $3,000 on gear, although they can. You don't even want to know what this costs.
I spent about 20, 25,000 on my studio back when I was doing my my radio show podcast. So yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. But you don't have to.
Right. There's probably 50 to 75 wrapped up in this one. So
Well, you've got all the bells and whistles there, Todd. That's,
yeah. But it's so this is not average. You know, this is not an average studio.
No. I mean, and we couldn't do a technically sophisticated show like we do here without that.
Right. Right. So it's, you know, and so when, you know, and some of the, well, he's spending $3,000. I'm like, I actually think, though, that was a somewhat of a wake up call, because let's be honest, you're going to have a program, you're going to have content, you need a good mic, you need a good soundboard, you need all that stuff that's, you know, if you really want to take it where it needs to be. You know, you should be thinking like a broadcaster, not like a, you know, a hobbyist. And,
but you know, some podcasters, and we've had a guest on recently that talk like this is trying to keep their costs down, so they're trying to build a business.
I did the same thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of them, can't justify it to begin with, because they're not going to have big audiences, and you just kind of grow your quality and your capability as you grow your audience. You know, it can be done. It's more challenging, I think, doing it that way.
Yeah, you know, I think my first one or two shows until I could get to Guitar Center was like, a $10 LabTac headset from Walmart, and then I bought some gear, and then that's part of the cost too, is you upgrade, and then. You know, what do you do with that old gear? You put it on eBay or you put it somewhere on Craigslist and try to sell it. But, heck, I got stuff around here still from the early days, some mics up there on the shelf that I, you know, have retired essentially, but they're still good mics. And the hoarder that I am, I don't let them, you know, I don't send them out. So, but anyway, yeah, pretty cool. Yeah. Good press this week. If we could get that kind of press every week, it would be nice. So anyway, we're down there at LA Podfest. You said that you guys were out pretty late last night, so you're not looking too worse for wear, Rob.
No, I'm hanging in there. I mean, it was a little hard to get up this morning, though.
Yeah,
but I still have my voice, though. That's a good thing. So
we had a party to go to last night, so it was about a 1 o'clock in the morning dealio for me too. So. You got a few more hours than I did. I only got four. So, it's going to be a short day. So what was your opinion on the first night of LA Podfest?
I thought it was really interesting. It's really the first time I've ever been to a podcast festival, like that before. It was a little too heavy on the comedy stuff. I mean, it was really more of a comedy festival than it was a podcasting festival. And Rick Calvert was there too. And he and I were talking about it too. And he'd love to add kind of that type of environment to the New Media Expo too. You know, where you have live shows performing at a certain time. And I mean, it does create a lot of kind of fans coming in and getting involved and being engaged with the show recordings live. And this isn't something new. I mean, podcasters have been doing live events for years now. But to have them all in one place and have them back to back in big rooms with video cameras and really good kind of recording capabilities and really nice stages and things like that is really an interesting, it's an interesting experience. I mean, because you can just quickly go around and experience all these different types of shows. You know, there was one show that was about mental health, but the common theme though is that all the shows that are there are essentially comedy shows. They can have a variety of different topics. You know, big name celebrity, you know, guests on, you know, like Marc Maron and Aisha Tyler did a kind of a recording of Girl on Guy last night. It was very entertaining. I was really, really impressed by Marc Maron and Aisha Tyler's session. It would be fantastic if those guys actually did their own podcast together. It's just that the energy is just so great with so many of those comedians, but But a lot of the folks that were there doing that do shows are stand-up comedians. So they were just they're used to riffing and talking dirty and just being crazy up on stage, drinking beers, they're doing the show the whole time. And so anyway, it's a different kind of podcasting. But I'd like to see an event that had more kind of more variety of different types of shows. And I just don't think that there's an event like that yet.
Yeah, and it would be, and the comedy folks, and of course you're in LA, and I don't think you could duplicate this in New York or a few other places, but
yeah,
you know, just the volume of people that you would need, you know, because I think about, you know, I think about this show, you know, the only place we'd really be able to do this show live would be at like New Media Expo or something like that, where we would garner a big enough audience to not make us look stupid,
yeah,
for a better word. But, yeah. And then again, it, yeah, I don't know. It is an interesting discussion point for sure.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, I know that shows like This American Life, and I know a lot of the Slate shows have done very popular live events, and those are political shows. But I think what the underlining content piece to that is that they bring a lot of humor and comedy to whatever subject that they do. And I know we don't do a lot of that here,
right?
And it's because this is a much more serious kind of new media show. And but that is kind of the common theme, as I think about it, with these live podcast events, is that they can be on a variety of topics, but they're kind of loosely connected to those topics. But the core of it is that they tell stories, they riff off of each other, and they engage the audience. And it's a great experience for somebody going there. But you do kind of... It's if you're a great fan of that particular show, I think you connect with it a lot better because you're used to listening to it. But coming in kind of cold and you don't really know who's on the stage unless they're really popular podcasters, it can be a little hard to connect right away at that level. I mean, you really have to be kind of present and really listening and really caring about what's being talked about up there. And oftentimes, you know, there was one podcast that basically the whole podcast, they were talking about babies, and it's like all the different funny things that happen with babies, and it's a panel full of guys. And it was a little difficult to connect with, I have to say. You know, guys talking about babies and how crazy they are and all a bunch of young guys, it was a little bit of a disconnect, and the audience wasn't really all that big for that. I mean, it was interesting, the shows that had a big audience and the ones that didn't. And I could definitely see a trend line there of how interesting the stories were, how good the hosts or the guests were and being funny and following a storyline. So I think that's really the key to a live event podcast, is that you just have to be able to connect with an audience, and that's what podcasting is all about.
Yeah, and so any offline discussions you can share anything with that was juicy or
juicy? I don't know about the
rumors anything.
Rumors? Yeah, there wasn't too much of that going on. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting today because the event goes Saturday and Sunday also. And the expectation, I talked to a couple of the organizers. I talked to Chris Mancini, who was on. And they all think, and Rob Walsh also thinks this too, that today is going to be the biggest day for the event. Most people bought Saturday tickets. So, you know, there's a Mark Maron, you know, WTF tonight. And I would say that place is just going to be packed. I mean, it's not a huge hotel. It's certainly not as big a venue as the New Media Expo is going to have, or frankly, even the podcast movement. I'd say it's a bigger venue than those.
Really? Wow.
Though it's a really nice hotel. It's a real high end, you know, right in the middle of Beverly Hills, across from the Beverly Center.
Right.
It's a really nice place. It's hard to find parking there unless you valet. I mean, it really has nothing to do with anything. But
yeah, does the $50 it cost you to valet is what it has to do with things.
Yeah. Well, I'm from Seattle, so you don't really have, you know, a lot of problems with things like that. So I come down here. That was a huge adjustment being down here and trying to survive down here.
Come to Hawaii. It's the same thing, but we don't.
I would imagine.
But the problem is we don't have valet.
Yeah, right. So how do you manage? Do you have to park like a mile away from where you're at or something?
You creep. You do the, you know, is that person coming out?
Yeah.
You know, the hotels have valet, but, you know, most venues, and if they do have valet, they got 10 slots, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
When it costs, you know, $500 a square foot or something like that for the dirt, you know, it's there's not a lot of parking unless it's.
But I did hear that the organizers were really, really happy with the Sofitel hotel and their cooperation. Yeah. I guess last year's event in Santa Monica, the hotel didn't really do a very good job and was not really, you know, totally engaged in the event and what they were doing, and they definitely felt it this year that the venue and the partner and a lot of the people that came from out of town stayed in the hotel, so it kind of a little bit created a little bit of that same kind of atmosphere as Podcast Movement and the original kind of Podcast Expo back in the early days in Ontario. So it kind of a little bit creates that,
right?
And it was fun, you know, having Greg Fitzsimmons there. I mean, a lot of the, you know, there was a couple of comedians that have appeared on Comedy Central were there. And so it's an event that I believe is going to get really big. Whether or not it's going to survive at the hotel that they're at right now, just because of the scale of it, it may have to move to the Los Angeles Convention Center or something like that at some point. Just because, you know, I just think it's going to become similar to a Comic-Con at some point. Would be my speculation at this point.
So should they actually, do you think they should change it to a PodFest, to a Comedy Fest?
You know, I talked to a guy up in Seattle, this was about maybe about a year ago, who puts on the comedy event up in Seattle, and he's actually been on the show. It was that radio guy that
right.
was doing his podcast in Seattle. I'm trying to blank. I can't remember his name right now. But yeah, you could easily see that event, kind of what they're doing with that event, really becoming just a comedy festival, right? And it just so happens that most of the acts are all podcasts.
Right,
and that's kind of a little bit what happened. I saw at Comic Con, and it actually goes on at Comic Con too, where podcasts about TV shows, movies, comic books, all that stuff. They do live events at Comic Con, so podcasting has been. I mean, that's been going on since. I mean, I went to Comic Con back in 2008, and they were doing live podcast performances at Comic Con in San Diego. So I can see podcasts, this kind of thing, going to those comedy festivals, and your point is good. I mean, do we really need a podcast comedy event, or does that just blend into a comedy event at some point? I think it's an interesting question. Or is this PodFest going to be something that happens a lot? I know that there's a podcast festival back in New York. I thought about doing one up in Seattle, but you know, who knows where this is going to go in the bigger picture of how these events are. If there's going to be kind of a merger between the comedy festivals and the podcast fest, you know, who knows?
Right. I've been watching. I think we talked a little bit about this on the last show. Did we talk about the share of ears survey from Edison? Did we cover that at all?
I think we showed it a little bit. I think you showed a screenshot of it on last Saturday.
Yeah.
Tom Webster's.
Yeah.
Kind of short video. Yeah. No, that was an amazing. I mean, it's a different way to look at the numbers because most of the surveys have been looking at the audio space in a very broad sense, where he was drilling into people that are passionate about podcasts and how that's changing the landscape.
And you know, it's definitely a it shows things are on the move. And I just, you know, it's one of those deals where, like, let's see if the momentum continues. You know, as you said, you were talking to some people, and, you know, we've seen these kinds of, you know, all podcasting is back movements before. But I think it is getting a little bigger groundswell this time, which is good.
No, I think it is too. I mean, this is a good time. So did you see a big bump in downloads when the new iOS 8 update came out?
I did, but
we saw a big jump.
But what we're seeing is it's kind of like this, and now we're going to say, where does it go to? If it stays over the long haul, I'll be happy. But I think there was some folks that maybe some settings got reset and a bunch of episodes got downloaded, because we were seeing back catalog being downloaded on some, kind of a spike there. So we'll see if, you know, if it continues. I'm assuming we're going to see one of these, and then we'll see where it goes. I really need a little more time to watch the data. A full month's worth of data would be good.
Yeah, and all those podcast listeners that sat on their phones and bent them, you know, are not going to be listening to podcasts quite as much.
Yeah, the nine of them.
yeah, exactly. Talk about some bad PR for ooh, Apple over, man, something that was completely stupid.
But, you know, on the surface, I don't think people that are Apple users are used to seeing faults in their phones. I don't think they're expecting to see that those types of issues crop up. I know there was some of these, and I didn't even hear about a bent phone syndrome with the 5S, and I guess there had been. But,
well, you got to bend your phone if you sit on it. It's just the way it's going to work. It's either that or it's going to break.
But they say they didn't sit on it. They said it was in the front pocket.
Jesus.
So, but you know, I had my wife's Samsung S5 in my pocket, and in that it's about the same size phone. So, you know, I would not expect that phone to ever bend being in my pocket. You know, so.
Yeah, I've heard people say that the iPhone 6 Plus is just too big and, you know, unwieldy.
But
you know.
But it's the same size as the Samsung S5. They're just not used to it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know.
Yeah. I compared my Lumia 1520 to Rob Walsh's Plus.
Yeah.
And they're almost identical in size.
Yeah. I think people are just not used to the iOS users are just not used. I guess they should get out more and touch other phones.
Yeah, Todd, you should do that. Yeah.
Well, I do, you know, and I ran Android for 6 weeks that I was using pretty much as my exclusive phone. And I'll be honest with you, I think the iOS experience is still better from an experience standpoint.
Yeah, I've got a 5S right now. It's way too small for me. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah.
Because you're used to the bigger phone. I joked with the Apple guys like 6 months ago about how they were... you know, I pulled out my iPhone 5S and I pulled out my Lumia 1520. I said, guys, are you going to do something in between here at some point? And they just all laughed at me. So... Oh, is Chris coming in?
All right.
Yay.
Hey, Chris.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Chris.
Good. So, I got to go this way.
So Rob and I have been chit-chatting about the podcasting space. So I think I'll let Rob go ahead and introduce you. Rob, go ahead.
Well, we're lucky to have Chris Gilbertson on, who's been doing a lot of podcast training and getting out there and really being an evangelist for the space. And I'll let her kind of run down all the stuff that she's doing. But it's really fantastic to have Chris on the show and sharing her thoughts about where she thinks the podcasting space is going and kind of what she's up to. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so honored and excited to be here. You guys are the pioneers in this industry, so it's a pleasure to be here. And I'm definitely excited, obviously, about the podcasting space and how it's really blown up and where things are going for I like to say it, change agents today. That's the biggest thing that I love about this space is that anyone can be able to get on a mic and be able to share their message and reach a global audience and do it without any red tape or any type of parameters that way. And we're able to be expressive. And that's the movement that we're really in. You know, we've been in the information age, but now we're really moving into the storytelling age. And so today, that's why podcasting is so powerful, because we get to tell our stories in our own voice. And everybody has their own unique flavor. So you don't have to be a certain type of person to make it with podcasting. So it's really powerful that way. And I know with what you guys have taught that there's so many opportunities out there for people today to be their own directors, their own creators. So the sky's the limit. That's what I'm probably my biggest area that I'm excited about with podcasting.
Chris, you know, if you could just take a few minutes and tell everyone about yourself and what you've done and how long you've been in the podcasting space. I think that'll help people get on track too, exactly on, you know, basically who you are as well too. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started in podcasting about 2.5 years ago. And the reason I jumped into this space is I wanted to take my business online. I actually previously was I've been traveling on the road about 6 days a week, and I was helping people get out of their homes through luxury. We did luxury auctions for luxury properties. And then I also help people get out of distressed property. So I was on the road about 6 days a week. So I wasn't living a lifestyle. I was traveling all the time. And so I started researching online different ways to take my message online and actually start to create a business online. And one of my friends had said, hey, why don't you check out, you know, the expert space? You can kind of take your ideas and take them online. And I was like, wow, this sounds really interesting. So I jumped in and I bought course after course, and I was trying to figure out this online ocean of how to actually start to create a business online and get your message out there. And blogging was intimidating for me because I'm not the best writer and it takes me forever to write a blog post. Video, I was intimidated in the beginning. So when I actually stumbled in, I just met somebody at an event and I overheard them talking about a conversation of podcasting. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that for a real platform for me to actually take my message out there and what I could do with it. So I started researching, dived right in, and just fell in love with it. And then when I launched my first podcast, that's when I started to get results. People were emailing me. I was getting people from around the world. People started asking me how I did what I did. And so that kind of evolved my business. And that's where it turned into me teaching others how to launch their podcast, how to take their ideas, put it into a framework, and create a business around that. So my business is Lifestyle Academy, where I help you be as successful online as you are offline. And I help people launch their podcasts, create their online funnels. And then I've been featured on Creative Live to host a 3-day podcast live workshop there. That was absolutely a blast. And I've done a lot of other different initiatives. I've coached probably over about 2,000 people on how to help them get their message out there in the world. And so it's been really incredible. And I'm just grateful for the pioneers that started this to launch really the exposure for podcasting and how you can use it for your business, not just like as a comedian. So very grateful.
Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's really interesting. Are you so what kind of training do you focus on? You're trying to take people from the very beginning stages that really don't know nothing about podcasting and taking them all the way through to launching it, and how much detail do you share with them along that path, and what's the typical success story that you see?
Yeah, so I have two different types of people that connect with me. People that already have a platform that are speaker, coaches, authors, experts, and they want to reach more people, and they really want to create a content marketing strategy for their tribe. That's a big area. Mm-hmm. And then the other is more of the new people that are trying to formulate their ideas, kind of like me when they're trying to figure out what their theme of their business is, what their branding is, what their message, what their overall message is. So it's not just scattered. So people actually can be attracted to them. Mm-hmm. So I really help them define their ideal client avatar. We start there first. And then I take them through step by step through creating their theme, their title, their intros and the outros, putting the whole technical piece together, then how to market and monetize that, and then how to create the funnels to drive traffic back, to build their list, to it depends on what their goals are with their podcast. Obviously, you know, podcast allows us to do a lot of great things, but I like to help my clients really focus on what their goal is for their business so that they can really let this tool open that up for them. So success stories, my clients are absolutely amazing. So some of my clients have brought in five-figure clients just within a few weeks of launching their podcast. Others have gotten TED Talks, been booked on CNN. The one thing that's really powerful about this, my good friend Susan Harrow, who teaches people how to get on the media, and she's helped a lot of the top experts, Allie Brown, some of the big names that a lot of people know. What she loves about podcasting is how the media can pick you up. And so it's a great way to showcase your talent. And so that's where I teach a lot of my students how to use that to position their content so the media would want to come and connect with them and pick them up for a news story or get them on TV in different areas that they're looking for. So that's been very, very effective for a lot of my students, because we all know that almost every major broadcast has a podcast. So there's definitely a scout engine to iTunes and to the platforms that are out there for podcasters to be seen and be heard and be discovered. So those are my big areas that I really help people be able to launch their podcast and also launch their business as well if they're just getting started.
Gotcha. So you're really kind of helping them build their personal brand that can extend into to trying to get on other media that will cross promote what they're doing in their podcast.
Yeah, that's just one option. If some people don't want to do any of that. Some people just want to grow their list. Some people want to take their, a lot of people come to me that want to repurpose content. So we take their content vault. Like I just launched Evan Pagan's podcast. So he has a ton of content. So we just repurpose that and turn that now into a massive platform for his audience to connect with his content on the go. So really what I always like to say is, what's your main goal that you want to accomplish? Let's start there and then start to really, really build your platform and your following. Mm-hmm.
So the most of the people that you're working with are business people, not per se content creators. They're folks that have a business and they're just trying to find a way to get exposure to the business. Am I hearing that correct?
No, they're all content creators, because at the end of the day today, we as business owners, we have to be content creators. It's one of the best sources for leads to come into your business. But what happens is a lot of people come to me with like 10 ideas. So what I really help people do is help them hone their ideas and really create a show that's going to wrap around what they're interested in, what they're who they want to attract into their business, and also what they're passionate about, of what their real message is. Because a lot of times people have mixed messages or they're not clear and it's kind of all over the place, and that's why they're not launching. So they're not taking the steps forward because they themselves are confused on exactly what they want to put out in out there for the world to find. So I help them get laser focused, get an action plan, and then take those steps to actually be successful.
You said something earlier that some of your shows, or you had a show that was either making 50K or reached 50K listeners. Which was it? I kind of missed that part. One of your success stories.
I think what you heard. So one of my students actually brought in five-figure clients. So what she did with her podcast is she would, and this is what I teach, is where she had a free 4-part video series that she shared on the podcast. So she has it just in the intro, like, hey, you want to go learn out more? Go check me out over here. This is to help you with X, Y, or Z. But today I'm going to talk about, and then she goes into her content and she drove traffic back to a free offer. And when she launched her podcast, that's how she brought in five-figure clients, $13,000 each. So she had a really good success story there.
So a lot of web marketers then, it sounds like to me too.
I work with, more people that have a mission, that have a message. I work with a lot of women that want to be able to inspire others with their stories, with whatever they've gone through. Depends on, I'm working with people that are helping people with overcoming alcoholism, if I can talk today. People that are helping people with, some of them are in their hobby. The majority of people that come to me are more business focused, that want to get their message out there in a bigger way and help and inspire more people.
You know, I think what I've seen, and over the past, in maybe a year, a couple of years, is there's definitely two basic camps of podcasters, and maybe more. But one of those camps is this entrepreneur help you type podcast, and kind of it sounds to me kind of like this category of podcast that you're working on, and they are definitely not traditional podcasters. They have a different mission. They always are either have a product to sell or have a book to promote, or and I think the medium's good for that. But it definitely we're seeing some, I guess for better, what would you call it, Rob? Would you call it a split?
Well, I think it's just another genre of podcasting that's out there. You know, I think podcast movement was kind of a reflection, kind of a focus area for business podcasts, essentially ones that are not necessarily focused on sponsorship necessarily. Chris, are you involved in helping shows, get sponsorship and advertising and that kind of stuff, or is it mainly just kind of consulting and trying to build a podcast that supports another type of business, right? An online business.
Yeah, I haven't really dabbled into the sponsorship area for my, that hasn't ever been part of my business model. More, for me, it's more getting my message out there and reaching more people. So some of my clients come to me with that, but that's typically not who I attract to monetize that way. They want to actually grow their audience and build their platform for their business.
And that kind of business can span, you know, whether it's, you know, a physical real world business, or it can be, you know, trainings, or it can help other people be successful in what they're doing as well. It kind of goes the whole spectrum, or is it mainly just trainings, helping people create kind of online brands to help people learn? It's more of an educational podcast. Is that what you're focused on, or where are people kind of grabbing to? It's probably the whole spectrum is my guess. But
yeah, I have people in, I mean,
yeah,
tons of different niches. I mean, I do get the occasional comedian that wants to you know, launch their content out there to get exposure and to be found. But a lot of people come to me, like doctors, chiropractors. They're tired of working hours for trading hours for dollars, and they want to know how to get their message out there. And they have a bigger message. Like they have, it's not just a business podcast. It's they really have a bigger message if they want to help people in a bigger way. So, I mean, I've worked with dentists. I've worked with all different spectrums. So a lot of that is really. The biggest part that people have a problem with, it's not the technical piece. It's actually getting their mind wrapped around of what they want to say and what their mm-hmm. content strategy is. So what's going to mm-hmm. go in with what they're already doing with YouTube and with their blog, and then how to incorporate that now on another medium that people can take with them on the go that they see the power of. And a lot of people come to me, they've been listening to podcasts and they're like, well, I want to do this. I just don't know how to do it. And I don't know what my theme is going to be and what's my niche and where can I really, really use this for my business. So it's really helping them the strategy behind it, and then also helping them create a solid content plan to let them shine as the expert and have that platform develop for them.
So what do you recommend around kind of format for shows like that, kind of in a general sense?
There's a couple different ways. So interview podcast, definitely that's how I was able to get discovered, because a lot of people search for other experts and that's how you can be found and discovered yourself. So I do suggest mm-hmm. that, but if you really are wanting to own, like if you've been in your field, like if you're a corporate trainer, I've got a woman that goes into corporations and teaches them about innovation and she's brilliant. So her podcast is mainly based on a tip-based podcast. So it's going to be a shorter version because the audience that she's targeting isn't going to listen for hours on end. So she has a very targeted 15 to 20 minute podcast that teaches one tip per podcast on how to innovate mm-hmm. within your company. And then that's mm-hmm. where she says, you know, connect with me personally if you want to learn more, or hire me as a keynote. And then what she'll also do is she'll interview people maybe once a month. That would be a top executive that would talk about how they've used innovation in their business and how other companies can use that. So she is able to draw in from how people search, but then also where she gets to be discovered as the expert for her credibility. And then she shares that in LinkedIn, which is a great platform for that type of business, B2B, for her to showcase herself. Mm-hmm. So that's and then the interview, I mean, I love interviews. That's my favorite thing to do. I love to interview other people and pull out the content that I'm looking for myself, but then also for my audience, what they would be looking for. So I think those are absolutely brilliant. I love the talk show style. That's another big one that a lot of people are having a lot of fun with, having more than one person on and having a dedicated show that you can have callers either send in messages, call in with different questions, Q&A, that's been a big opportunity as well, or you just have a structured show of what you're talking about with more than one person. So those are what I've seen that have worked really well for the business space. You know, people have a lot of fun with them.
You know, one thing I've seen here recently, and I was actually, I kind of laugh because obviously the interview space is exploding. And in the early days, there was not much, I guess, for better words, interviews. There wasn't a lot of interview shows. There's a fair amount. But, you know, I was asked to be interviewed on a show, and I did the interview. And a couple weeks later, another gal asked me to interview on the show. And what shocks me is these folks are like, I'm going to send you the questions in advance. I'm like, okay. And I got the same exact questions. So it was obvious that the person had taken the same course. What I'm seeing is, I guess for a better word, a lot of cookie cutter shows. And to me, I just, you know, I actually turned down the second interview because I was like, eh. You know, if it's going to be this same format, I guess that's my worry, is that, and I understand people are trying to figure out what's going on, but if they follow a program, don't we start ending up with a bunch of cookie cutter shows that are out there?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. There's a lot of copycatting going on out there. And it's the thing that I really try to convey with the people that I work with and all my students and clients is really to own your own originality, because really the sky is the limit when it comes to this. You don't need to follow a cookie cutter process to be successful. Yes, it's great to have best practices and understand what other people have done and to be able to replicate that for things that you like, but not to, you know, just copy the whole model, because that's not going to explode you anyway. You need to have your own flair to it. And don't be afraid to put yourself out there in crazy fun ways, because that's what this platform is all about. If people want to be like they're sitting with us drinking their coffee. I mean, that's what it feels like when you listen to a podcast. So don't be afraid to let your own originality come into that and let it flow. And I think Todd did top to piggyback on that. I think a lot of people aren't used to interviewing either. So they, either they're too critical of themselves and they want to have a set framework, or they just haven't done it enough to get into the flow of just being able to let it be more of a talk show and more freestyle. So, and I think people have different goals that they want to have with their podcast and what they're looking for, but I really own your own style. You can take from different pieces and you know, put that together, but don't just take one model, add your own originality to it, because that's how you really stand out. And that's how you're really going to be able to shine.
And I think,
yeah, I agree. I mean, Todd, that each person that gets into this, they probably have gung ho about it, and then once that red light comes on with the mic, and it's like, what do I say? And I'm scared, and all that kind of stuff. And you know, like Todd and I on this show, we just turn on our cameras and start talking. And of course, both of us are very experienced podcasters, have been doing it for a long time, but a lot of people that are new, it takes time to learn how to do this and to be, to understand the technology, just basic things like how close to get to the mic, what kind of room environments are good. I know I'm not in an ideal situation here, but I don't normally do the show here, but it is something that takes time for people to kind of get accustomed to. And like Todd and I know, there's, after 7 episodes, a lot of shows pod fade because it becomes too much work, or they get frustrated, or they run out of something to say, and oftentimes they'll quit the show. And that's also could be because they've applied probably too much structure to the show and it's too hard to produce, or they're doing too much post-production editing. There's a lot of pitfalls. I mean, so how do you advise kind of your students to kind of navigate those waters of being unique, but yet confident and helping them kind of properly project in a podcast to connect with an audience, because it's not something that most people know how to do.
Right. They're definitely a great question. So the structure of understanding what your content is going to be. So like we reverse engineer with who they want to attract, what their theme's going to be. Once we have that all figured out, then it's really planning out what their episodes are going to be. So if they're going to be doing their solo show, you know, having that at least mapped out for at least the 20 to 30. I mean, I make them get quite a few set up so that they feel comfortable with their content and what they're doing. And then when I teach them different ways on how to project their voice and to help them with their vocals. Mm-hmm. But mainly the biggest thing is once they figure that all out, it's really having a team to help support them. So having someone from Odesk to produce your podcast for you, upload it, get that all put together. So all you have to do is show, because 90% of the people that come to me are not technical. So they have an amazing message they want to get out there, but they're so afraid of technology. So it's helping them craft that and then get help them to find the right team to produce that podcast for them so they can get out of their own way, get out of the kitchen, and be able to just show up and jump on the mic and have a blast, because that's where they show up the best anyway. So helping them find having resources for that, and then also their marketing schedule, like what their marketing plan is, whether they're going to use, a lot of people try to go out there and like, what's the term? Like they try to like do all the networks, and it's just, they're adding on so much to begin with a podcast. And now they want to add on 10 different social media channels. And that's where another area that they get frustrated with. So I say, pick one or two channels. I love Twitter. I think that's a great platform for podcasting since it's P2P with a podcast person to person. Same with Twitter. Great way to showcase yourself out there, get real engagement. And then I teach people how to use strategies to actually find the right followers and then to share those, the tweets out there to grow your following. That's more for your audience, not just random people. And then Facebook's another great platform. So picking one or two social channels and then having your schedule of what you're going to do. Maybe you're going to share a quote from one of your, a quote with your picture and then your name. And you can make those in Canva.com. Super great platform. PicMonkeys, another great one. And they take literally a minute to make. Super simple. You don't have to be a graphic design artist there or wait, you know, a week to get graphic art back from somebody. You can make them yourself, post them out there. And the great thing about today with Facebook is you can pre-post a lot of your content. So having just a schedule of what that's going to be, what it's going to look like, and just staying consistent with it. You know, Joe Polizzi from Content Marketing Institute, he always says the number one reason people fail with content marketing is because they don't stay consistent. And it's so amazing to me, because I've seen people, I just got an email a week ago from someone who wants to work with me now. And she's like, I've been following you for 2 years. And I don't know who she was, but she's like, I love your podcast. I love what you do. Now I'm ready to move forward. So you never know where people are going to be at in their cycle of wanting to work with you or connect with you on what you do with your show. So that's why staying consistent with it and just having that plan. And like, you know, what Rob's talking about, don't get discouraged, just stay consistent with it, because content marketing is a longer term game plan. But what's so great right now is by doing this, you're setting yourself up by leagues right now of what's going on online for where, how people search for you. Because when they come to your website and they see, you know, 12 different blog posts of content they're looking for, they're going to read through all that and they build relationships with you. And then they also have the podcast on the go to connect with you for your voice. And that's where the real connection happens. So you can shorten your sales cycle there because of the connection that happens through your podcast. So stay consistent, but set yourself up for success so you can stay consistent with it. So you don't fall behind.
Yeah, one of the things you said was it Pick Canva? I'm not familiar.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I love these. So there's Canva, CANVA.com. That's a place to make. They have all the different sizes. So if you have Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, any of the like even business cards, you can make all this great stuff. And they have a whole assortment of free sources. And then you can just upload your picture and it's drop and drag. And then you push a button and it creates the JPEG for you. Brilliant. It's so incredible. Great for podcasters. And then PicMonkey, PicMonkey.com. That's another one. I prefer Canva because they have so many more features there in images, but PicMonkey is another great one too.
All right, cool. Yeah, I was just trying to make sure. Oh, is it PicMonkey? I'm sorry.
I think it's Pic. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. You know, I think one thing is, you know, I'm a, I guess for a better word, maybe I'm a curmudgeon in this morning.
This never happens, Todd.
You know, I really, to be quite frank with you, there's a lot of these shows today that I turn on and I just want to throw up in my mouth. And it's these entrepreneur business promotion. I'm selling this. And to me, what turns me off is it's just, it sounds fake. So how do you get your clients not to sound fake? And the first thing they're trying to do is they're trying to sign me up for a newsletter. They're trying to sell me something. They're trying to have me buy their $1,000 program, or they're trying to sell consulting. And I don't even know who this person is. They have no credentials in the space, but then it's just like, and I just want to be like, oh, let's next site, move on. How do you, you know, because that's the key. If you're like me, who's a doubting Thomas, about a show or a person, you know, how do you get them to build true credibility? Because most of these people have, you know, they may be known in their small circle, you know, but they are not at all known outside of that. You know, and the same with this show, we're not really known outside of our circle. But how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes back to remembering that there is an end listener. That this is for the people that you're wanting to connect with and share. So for me, my goal isn't, I'm gonna sell so much for my podcast and I'm gonna put this episode out and it's gonna, you know, that's never been my goal. This has always been about a go-giver type of platform for me to share. And yes, people are going to be attracted to me for wanting to work with me, but a lot of people aren't, and they're wanting to tune in for great information to help them in their life. Right. And so that's why I always go back to, who's your ideal client avatar, your listener, of who, what that content is that you want to share. And then we're not hammering people on the podcast. Like, I don't share anything. The only thing I do is in my intro, I share where people can go find me on my website. And then at the end, I ask for reviews. In exchange, I give giveaways away. And then also for if I've got a new video series or more content that they can consume and get to know me better. So I've got a bunch of 4-part video series where they get to see me and they're able to connect with me more. So what I suggest with that is really focus on the end user. What you're passionate about lines up with also what your business is about, and then also what your listener's looking for. So kind of that triple threat positioning, but where it's based on real content, and it's not, I never sell directly from the podcast ever. It's about building a community and then the right people filter in from what you're sharing. So it comes from your honest content. And, you know, people feel that just like what you're talking about, Todd, when they're not really genuine, that comes across so obvious on a podcast. So that's why you got to be yourself. And that's why I love this platform and why a lot of women are coming to me, because women predominantly don't want to sell. They're like, I don't want to share myself. I'm scared. I don't want to be that pushy, salesy person. Yep. And with podcasting, you get to just show up and be yourself. That's what's so brilliant about this. So again, it just comes back to owning your content and owning your personality.
Yeah, I hate to generalize, but I think a lot of women do kind of like that more soft approach and not put themselves out there quite that way. So podcasting can certainly span that spectrum of getting really personal. I mean, there's nothing more personal than a person being in your ear in a headset or a earpiece. So
what do you guys call that? What's your best definition for explaining that? I would love to hear your take on that.
Oh, what the whole kind of personal aspects of podcasting? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, like, because the earbuds, I mean, it's so personal. I people don't realize how personal that is. I would love to hear how you guys describe that.
Yeah, it's definitely getting in. I think it's totally getting in your head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Because, you know, there's times that I will have subscribed. I subscribe to a lot of podcasts because I just try to go through them and listen and see what's new and what's out there. And oftentimes I'll listen on a speaker versus a headphone because I'm just doing other stuff. And I will definitely not connect as deep when I'm listening on a speaker versus being plugged in. Because I think what happens is that because you're wearing earbuds, the outside noise that's normally there in our lives, if you're at the office or at the gym or wherever you are, there's a buffer there, you know, that noise is coming here primarily, not externally. So I think that's why the connect, that's why people listen to music with earbuds on, because it's boom, boom, it's right there. There's no distraction. They can enjoy it. So I think it's the same exact thing. I don't think it's too complicated, but I think that's why the space is so powerful.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I've learned over many years of doing this is that I used to wear two earbuds doing podcasts, and I found that it's more difficult to be kind of natural. So I only wear one now, just so I can hear myself in a more natural way, and then I can also hear things that are around me. It feels like I'm in a much more kind of normal, like I'm sitting in there talking to a person personally. Because if I have both earbuds in my head, it's just too much focus, and in my own voice, it feels muffled, and it doesn't feel as natural. So doing podcasts and stuff, I've really gravitated away from, you know, the big earphones and stuff like that that have been so common in radio. And oftentimes, mm-hmm. the only reason that you have to have that in radio is because you need to hear the breaks and those kind of things, so you know when to come back. But in podcasting, you really need to do that. As long as you can hear the other person on the other side that you're talking to through Skype or whatever, I just think it's a much, much better way of doing it.
And Rob, I'm the opposite. I get distracted.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I'm the same way.
If I have an earbud out and it's like, and something, I'm just, you know, I'm like, what was that? And it's like, you know, because my studio's in my house, so you know there's a life going on behind the door on the other side. You
so
know.
I guess I gotta turn my volume down, I guess, because it's like it kind of blows me away. Yeah.
I will mention that it's absolutely pouring here. I don't know if you guys can hear it in the background. It is coming down cats and dogs right now. We need the rain, so it's good.
That's right. We didn't give our usual weather report.
It's just weird here in Hawaii right now. It's been muggy. It's unusual. I mean, we were at a party last night. And I was talking to some friends, and they were like, "The summer's been the weirdest summer in 20 years. It's just been odd. People have not gotten the Hawaii experience this summer if they've come to Hawaii.
It's called climate change, Todd.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever.
It's changing everywhere.
But it's definitely been a weird summer. Anyway, enough on the weather.
Pretty soon it's going to be a desert in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Don't say that.
We do have a desert in Hawaii, believe it or not. So
it's on the Big Island.
Yeah,
right?
We do. Yep. So and we have snow too.
Yeah, that's right. Up in the mountains. Yeah, or up on the volcano.
Up on Mauna Kea, yeah. Yep. Not on the volcano. The volcano's pretty low. So matter of fact, we have a town.
The old
that is,
volcano.
Yeah. We have a town that is in danger of being overrun by a lava flow. So that's it's been in the news every day. Just Mother Nature, whether it be hurricanes or lava or earthquakes, Mother Nature is unrelentless. They will take back the land.
Hey, Chris, do you ever go to any of the podcasting events like the New Media Expo, or did you think about going to Podcast Movement or anything?
Yeah, I went to New Media Expo. Awesome event. That was really fun to meet with a lot of other podcasters. I was at another event for the Podcast Movement. So I'm getting out there more. I do a lot of, I speak at a lot of events that are in different niches and in different industries. So I kind of pick and choose with where I'm going with different events. But that this year, that just lined up with another event. Did you go to that? Did you go to Podcast Movement?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How was it?
It was great. I mean, I you know. Todd and I were there.
So, yeah, we were.
I mean, it was
eye-opening.
It was eye-opening. I mean, it's good to see another event come up. But it was definitely a different faction or a different group in the podcast community than you'd see like at, you know, the LA Podfest, which we were just talking about, you know, before you joined us.
Yeah.
That's going on this weekend in LA. And, so each of these events are kind of popping up that kind of cater to a different kind of like group of podcasters. And I think we're seeing it happen more and more. And actually, before you hopped on, we were starting to talk a little bit about comedy festivals in various cities around the country. And as you start seeing the popularity of these podcast comedy festivals, how, you know, those events might merge together. What's your comment on all that? I mean, what's your observation of what's happening in the podcasting space when it comes to events like this and live events? Do you see any clients that you have or you're suggesting to them that maybe they get involved in maybe speaking at conferences or doing live events for their podcasts?
Yeah, definitely. Some of them got nominated and were speaking at the event. So I think it's a great way. I think it's a great way to build the community even bigger. And then obviously what you're talking about, it's kind of like what happened in the blog world where the curation started to happen, where certain blogs started to, you know, there's different niches and different genres of categories of blogs. Same thing that's happening with the podcast world here. So I think it's great. I think it's great to get out and meet other experts and be able to connect and see, you know, just share practices, what's working, and just, you know, meet in person. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. I think that's a phenomenal opportunity that way. And I think there's a huge opportunity for people that can find the different niches as well that are going to support their community of other podcasters. Like I could even see this happening for, you know, professionals, you know, maybe like dentists, doctors in those other areas, or even a real estate niche. So there's a lot of opportunity there. And I think it's a great way to connect with other people. And I love live events. I think they're so much fun because you can learn so much and you can connect with so many people. Excuse me.
You know,
go
ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say, do you see other, you know, like medical and other types of industries like you were just talking about? Actually, those industries have conferences too. Do you see them maybe supporting doing live podcasts at their conferences? Is this going to spread, do you think? I know it's come to like the social media kind of conferences already, but do you see it spreading beyond that?
I think there definitely is an opportunity. I think there's a main hub of podcasting, like kind of like what Social Media Examiner has created for all the social media stuff, that I think there definitely can be a platform just for podcasts. That way, if someone wants to take that and own that and really have people come in with their best practices and teaching and training and how to use it with Pinterest, how to use it with Twitter, how to use it, you know, all the different networks out there and how to use it for a business or as a comedian or, you know, XYZ. I think that's a great opportunity. I think that there could be, I don't really see anybody developing this, but I think at some of the bigger conferences for chiropractors and professionals, that there could be a component that they add at their conferences to stream a lot of that. I think that would be brilliant if they stepped on that. And then also for them just to be aware of, of content marketing strategies. So bringing that in and having, and I think that's kind of our job as the people that are the advocates for the podcasters to reach out to connect with those type of platforms to help them understand the power of this and really, really what it can do for their content marketing efforts.
You know, you look at what Jamie Davis does, and of course, Jamie's got a show on my network right now, htweekly.com, and he does everything on health. He's a paramedic, he's a nurse by profession, but Jamie goes to EMT, nursing, medical type conferences, and has been probably for the past 5 years, and doing not necessarily live, but going to where the people are for the content, and sets up, he's either got a booth, generally has a booth and a studio set up, and he brings people in and does interviews, you know, 10, 15 minute interviews. He can boom, 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 knock a bunch out. And even some of that is a monetization strategy too, where maybe there's a vendor there that's exhibiting that wants to get some additional exposure. They'll put together, a piece for them. So there's definitely, depending on where you are in your business and your, but, you know, Jamie's show is not necessarily to promote, and Rob, this is kind of there's this flip, and I definitely see where there's a difference. Jamie's doing a show to pass information about other people, whereas some of these new shows are, they are the center versus the external the center. You know, maybe I just had a little epiphany here, but that is kind of the difference, don't you? You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's being a show that's about featuring other people and doing an interview, and it's shows that are focused on driving a particular message that the host brings,
right,
and then guests come on to kind of
support
that message, right?
Right.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So, and I think the key, though, and I think what's important is that we find that podcasters have to find that fine line, because if I go to and this is just me, if I go to a show and it's becoming obvious it's me, that I have less motivation to come back and listen again. If I'm getting a good story, and it goes back to the storytelling.
Well, it's value, right?
Yeah, the value. Yeah. And if I'm getting good information from not only the host, but also the guest, then I'm going to come back and listen. And the same thing with this show. We want to be able to provide good information and talk less than we listen more than we talk. But I think as a listener, that's one of the things that I gravitate to is, you know, there's got to be that good mix of information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And some fun and entertainment thrown in there that keeps people listening.
That's true.
That was definitely the common theme that I saw at the LA Podfest. So a lot of these podcasts is that, you know, comedians can get up there and talk about a lot of different subjects and a lot of different topics, and they have certain levels of expertise in various things. But there's always that comedy element that keeps people laughing.
Or no expertise, and they're just bringing the common man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like just telling stories from their life. It can be bathroom humor, it can be sex jokes, it can be all sorts of stuff. But it goes the whole spectrum, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So it's, you know, and be honest with you, you know, I think this what you're doing is great, and I'd be interested to follow some of your stuff that you're doing. It's and you know, be honest with you, prior to today, I really had no exposure to any of your work, so it tells you the breadth here of where the space is going. A lot of new faces, which is good.
Well, and that's exactly what I try and do with this show is try and tap into all those parts of the podcasting space and bring them in, because there's even more companies that I know about that are involved in the podcasting space that we haven't even touched on yet on this show. And it's just because I haven't got to it yet. Because there's so many more people getting involved. And Todd, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Especially on the advertising side, the whole dynamic insertion companies, the companies that are working with big brand advertising. You know, Podcast One kind of sits in the middle of that stuff, and then the whole broadcast radio side, which is jumping into the space, which we're kind of in the middle of. And that's why I'm here at Podcast One, is because I saw that, and Podcast One is kind of a little bit being in the epicenter of the conflict, really, and this is what I like to call it, between broadcast radio and podcasting, because that blade between those two cuts both ways. I mean, it's not a perfect fit. And we're trying to figure out, you know, where that fit is between broadcast and podcast.
You know, the articles in the Washington Post and Fast Company from this past week were great. And I, you know, there was definitely a theme that I saw across all the different communities was, you know, oh, these are just big shows. You know, they, of course, they have a big audience already. They don't need any promotion. They already, you know, and it's somewhat true. Some of these guys have a big audience that they brought. And they said, the little guy's going to get pushed to the curb. And believe it or not, the person that came back and made the most profound statement was my mom. And my mom never weighs in on these conversations, but she was following one of the threads. And she said, some of those big shows don't have the connection with the listener. She says, if they don't have the connection, I don't care how good they are, I'm not listening. So she says, you know, and it's really, that's what it boils back to in a nutshell. And I think that's what podcasters need to remember, is that on the other, in this case, on the other side of the camera or on the other side of the earbud, there is a listener. And that's, if we don't connect with them in our podcast, you're not going to be successful. It's one of the things I've been doing with my show. I'm at getting ready to bust 1,000 episodes here with my tech show. And, you know, so what I've really done, I'm trying to do right at this point, is got into this battle rhythm, right? Boom, 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 and putting episodes out. But someone said something either on this show or somewhere else the other day, or a couple weeks ago, and I was like, man, I really need to make sure that I'm still connecting with that audience. And so I've been asking people, hey, send me in, you know, instead of sending comments about the show, send me emails about you, you know, because what you'll find as you go out and become more known is people are going to reach out and say, hey, I know you're listening to your show. And you're like, who are you? Yeah. And that's the last thing I want to happen anymore. I used to learn, you know, they would know about my life and we'd go to dinner and I'd learn, you know, I'd know them by the time we had done with dinner. But I want to be able to have a bigger connection, that when we sit down for dinner, I already know that he's got three kids and he's looking for a job or whatever it may be. I want to build that. And it's very hard. I have a very large show, so it's very hard to do that. That connection. But I think it's important that podcasters do that every day.
Well, Don, I think you raise a really good point, and Chris, jump in on this too, but not every person has the ability to connect with an audience over audio. I mean, I think it's we go through a lot of celebrity hosts that come in here that have a perceived big following as part of their celebrity careers and things like that. But it is a skill that even actors don't necessarily have. They're used to reading a script and being told what their personality is. But to get on a mic and actually connect naturally with their real personality doesn't work.
And the real personality could be totally screwed up. It could be a basket case.
I see it all the time. Sorry to say, but it's a skill that has to be honed over many years, and some people just have it right out of the gate, but others don't.
Well, and that's why I encourage a lot of, I'm in a comedy class right now for myself. I'm in a storytelling course. Like, I'm constantly putting myself in different situations to hone how I can present and connect better, because we really, it is the storytelling age now. And those of us, I mean, look at Steve Jobs, look at what he built, and it's all from stories. I mean, he has built an amazing following in the iTunes community. And when you see him present, it's all based on stories, and that's how he gets people to buy into what his ideas are, and then create that loyal following. And that's what we have to look at for ourselves as well, is how can we communicate better? How can we connect better? And I love that you're doing that, Todd, of asking people. I'm going to actually borrow that as well. I think that's brilliant to have them email in about you. Those are some of my questions when people sign up on my newsletter that I ask right away. But I think it's brilliant to have that out there as well, because people don't know until you tell them. They're not going to, even though you're still connected on your podcast, having ways that you can connect with people and bring them in even more is so powerful. Because people want to know, we don't want to be on the outside looking in anymore at brands. We want to get to know them, because with social media, what's changed is the conversation has changed. We now can complain or can be grateful for whatever those companies are putting out there, but our voice gets heard now because it's social media. Other people are looking at what other people are saying about us. So being able to create those stories and create that engagement, it's going to be fun, first of all, but also, honing your own skill sets. And I'm biased. I think everybody should at least use audio at some form of way in their marketing, because business and everything in life comes down to how we communicate, how we connect with people. And whether it's your relationships, if you want to work on that, whether it's your business, whether it's about, whatever that is that you're looking to grow, I think a lot of it comes down to being a better communicator. And audio is one of the best ways to do that, because you get instant feedback on what you sound like and how you're projecting out there. So those are just some tips there that I throw in.
When I started podcasting here in Hawaii's kind of got and I don't know if it's maybe it's not unique to Hawaii, but here, hey brah, let's and there's a lot of pidgin being used many times, and it's some people look down upon it, but it's kind of I guess for better words, it's a way to people connect here sometimes. And if I get in a local situation, I'll talk a little pidgin myself, but not very much. But they'll like,
oh, we gotta hear that.
So they'll be like, hey, brah, let's talk story, and it'll be like, let's. So they wanna what it is here in Hawaii. Everyone is there is huge amount of storytelling, whether it be the Hawaiians telling the story about the past, about things. It's just really big. So I had actually registered some domains early on, talkstorynetwork.com, talkstorypodcast, because I always thought that there would become a time when I would be able to connect with great storytellers and be able to, have maybe a small network. Now, I have never used those domains, but I've been renewing them just the same because I know there's value there. I think that we all understand the power in being able to tell a story. And as we say in here in Hawaii, talk story. It's because people connect with that. It's,
And well, you're co-creating because when I'm telling a story, you're hearing the story from your take on it, what you've experienced and what you've gone through. So we're co-creating at the same time. Yeah. And then the thing I'm working on now is getting better at involving the audience in the story. So it's not me telling the story at them. It's us co-creating that story together so that they're involved in the visualization and actually what's going on. And that just ingrains so much more of a connection even more. So it's just more involved and there's more connection there. So I love that point. That's brilliant.
You know,
and I think Todd, I was just going to mention, I was at a live on stage with Mark Maron and Aisha Tyler last night, and Mark Maron is really he's really talented at kind of self depreciating, kind of real world, you know what I mean, kind of storytelling about the personal struggles that he has in his life. And I think what happens and why his show has been so successful is that there's a lot of people out there that have those same struggles or think those same things. You know, even Louis C.K. is another example of a guy that who has done a little bit of podcast a long time ago. If you do a search in the iTunes catalog, you can actually find a Louis C.K. podcast, but he only did like 6 episodes and his video. So it's kind of interesting. It goes back to his pre-popularity days. But, he's been a long-time comedian for years and years, kind of honing his craft, but my bigger picture is both those guys are really good at kind of like telling their life story essentially as a story, but it's told in a way that's humorous and that connects with other people and they can relate. And I think that's the key, is being able to tell a story or tell something that other people can connect with and relate to and understand and maybe find some humor in that. Is really, really hard. You know, it's hard to do, and it takes a lot of skill, and a lot of stand-up comedians, I think, struggle with that. I mean, and he said last night, he said it took him like 6 years to be able to get up on stage and actually communicate in a natural way that was genuine, that people could relate to in a conversation that people really understood, and he was clear in what he was saying, but he was funny, but he was also capable of understanding himself at a level and not be scared to communicate that.
About 6 or 7 years ago, I should put some context around this to just tell you how a specific story you can tell can have an impact is that, my show's a tech show. I talk about tech. It's really not telling a story per se. It's talking about what's going on.
But you do tell a lot of stories on your show, personal life stories.
Right, I do.
Yeah.
So I had this situation going on. I was living on historic Fort Island, and historic Fort Island's got a lot of history and, as it turns out, a lot of ghosts. And we had a ghost in the house, and it was my small son at the time. It was Jeffrey, the blue man. So I was going through kind of this sequence of events over about a month of what was going on, to the point where we brought a priest in to try to get rid of Jeffrey, the blue man. And that remains, that storyline, even 7 years or, 8 years later, is the, from my audience, can you tell that story again? Can you tell that story again? So it's, and then I tell that story maybe once every couple of years to the audience, and then the people that haven't listened, then get it. But what it proved to me, more than just having fun telling the story, because it's pretty funny, is the that I understand. It made me as a podcaster realize this stuff's important. These life events and telling what's going on and being truthful is critical. And that's why some people hate it. I spend 15 minutes at the beginning of the show not even talking about, just talking about stuff, family stuff and the house and life. Yeah. And my wife hates it because she says I share too much. But but anyway, we've diverged here quite a bit. So I want to get back, and we've got a few minutes left before the show, and let's talk a little bit. Bring up your website here. Whoops. Oh, okay. podcaster failure here. It's one of those buttons that I did
Todd, that TriCaster you have is just too complex.
Well, it helps if you
need like three buttons. This.
I love it though. It looks great.
Yeah, it helps if you start the application that allows you to show the screen. You press the button, it's not there. Now it's there.
There she is.
So tell us about your website and what you offer. And
yeah, so at Lifestyle Academy, it's all about how to create a lifestyle business as an entrepreneur. So how to create systems and processes to really set yourself up for success and be able to launch a world-class podcast, and then also how to create funnels and systems for your business so that you can attract clients on demand. So a lot of that is just blog post there that he's going through. But if you want to connect with me personally, just head over to lifestyleacademy.com. There's a contact button and be happy to connect with you to learn more about your business and what you're looking to do online.
And that's important, a contact button. You'd be amazed how many podcasters don't have that.
Yeah, you got to do that. Hey,
I want to connect with you. I like to take calls and connect with people. I do strategy sessions to help them with their business. So I'm all about the connection.
Chris, do you do a bunch of stuff with YouTube, or what's your strategy around YouTube with your podcast?
You know, that's a great question. So when I first started out podcasting, it was all audio. Then last year I dipped into doing video interviews. But for me, that actually ended up, I am such a better interviewer when I'm just listening, when I don't have to worry about the camera. So I cut that back and I put the YouTube videos out there. I didn't do any SEO with them though. So for me, I think if you're going to use video for podcasting, I think shorter is better, especially for people wanting to download it on their phone. But I only put the audio out there for the podcast, and then I would flip the video onto YouTube for the interviews. But since they're longer, because my interviews are about an hour, most people don't watch them as much on YouTube. They're going to listen on the podcast and take that with them on the go. So sure, my strategy going forward now are just short 3 to 5 minute videos that are going to drive traffic on YouTube over to my other offers, like my next video series or something that I have more content from. So I'm going to implement that strategy now going forward.
Very cool. How about an email address that you can give over?
Yep. Absolutely. Chris, it's Chris with a K, KRIS at lifestyleacademy.com. That's the best way to reach me.
So lifestyleacademy.com and Chris at lifestyleacademy.com. How about a Twitter? Is it Lifestyle?
Twitter, it's Chris Gilbertson.
Okay. Very, very good.
Rob? Early on, so you've had that for quite a while probably, that Twitter account.
Yeah, I have had it for a while. I don't actually know when I signed up with it. I'm just getting much more into Twitter now. I love it with the podcast for people to tweet and connect with you that way. It's just amazing because there for me, I get to see who's listening. So you get to find out about their business. You get to find out what they like. They tell you what episodes they like. So that's why I love Twitter. I think it's just a beautiful platform to support podcasters.
And it's interesting too, because, depending on the genre, people tend to migrate to certain platforms. So, the geeks are all in Google+. They're on Twitter too, but it's really weird where you figure out where you can really connect the most with your audience.
Yeah, and some people are focused on Facebook too.
Yeah.
You can get really good engagement there as well, depending on what kind of content you create.
Exactly. And that's knowing where your audience is hanging out at. And then also the platform that you like to engage with as well is really important.
Yeah.
I love Google+. That's just not quite my community yet. Yeah. So I'm starting to do different strategies in with that. But I love that because all the feed stays up there. I think it's brilliant how they've put that together for people.
The challenge I have on Facebook, Rob, is stuff gets buried.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
You know, that's the thing that drives me nuts about that. But
so you have to make really, really good posts. When you post something, it needs to be really rich and engaging.
Images help too. I found that's helped.
And well,
it's the same with on Twitter. I've seen some metrics around Twitter too. You should post a image of some sort with every post that you do if you can.
Nice.
The engagement actually spikes. So
makes sense.
I've seen the actual numbers on that. It's the same thing. I think Twitter and Facebook are similar in that way. But that's about the only thing that's similar between Twitter and Facebook, though.
Well, as we come to a close here, I want to remind everyone that National Podcast Day, you can find out information about that at nationalpodcastday.com, is on September 30th. And that's being organized by Steve Lee. So if you're a podcaster.
Oh, Steve Lee. Okay.
So don't forget about National Podcast Day. That's coming up here just in a very short few days.
What are we supposed to do on Podcast Day that's special?
Well, let me bring up the website here and see what Steve is recommending that we do. He's saying that start with a conversation. What we do on, and basically as a community, we can feed off each other and tell the world about our craft, following our suggestions on what podcasters can do for National Podcast Day. So join the live announcement. Post the NPD banner, post NPD audio or video, change your social media image with the NPD logo, attend a conference such as New Media Expo, LA Podcast Festival, Podcast Movement, host a meetup, give away something on your show to celebrate, grab your mic and camera and ask someone, anyone about their favorite podcast, share the response and join the worldwide event using hashtag Podcast Day, create a 30-second promo and cross-promote with other podcasters. Post pictures of your studio using Podcast Day. Watch the live social stream. Have other ideas? Let us know. So anyway, there's should be a lot of fun.
Well, that sounds like a full-time job, Todd.
Well, and what Steve is trying to do, and I think it's worthy of some mention, is he's just he wants to build exposure, and he's picking a day. And he's, you know, he's the idea guy behind this, and we deserve our own day.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. I love that. I think that's brilliant.
They have a day for everything else. So
I was just going to say that. I mean, there's a holiday for everything else.
Too bad the podcasting doesn't
We're changing
have a
the world. We get a day.
It's too bad the podcasting doesn't have a birthday.
Well, you know, my 10-year birthday's coming up here in, October 9th. So it's crazy.
Yeah, I think it was 10 years. September 14th was or 15th was when I first started podcasting. So it was just a week or so ago was my 10 year.
Yeah, so October 9th. It's just crazy. 10 years at this. And, you know, we've seen all of it. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And prior to it, too. I started doing this back in 2001 or two, actually.
Yeah, before. It just
wasn't called podcasting.
Yeah.
It wasn't called. Yeah. Wow. That's what got you guys into it? What was your big aha to use this platform?
I wasn't a great blogger and I like to talk.
Yeah. I love it. Yep.
Yeah. So I had
go to your strength, Todd. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can say really quickly, I was doing basically search engine optimization consulting back when I first started. And I walked into a broadcast radio station and asked them if they had a tech show. And I'd go in every Saturday morning. I did it for 2 years, just walk in the studio. I had a couple of the guys with me. And it was called the Web Talk Guys. And we just went in the studio and just talked about cool stuff that was going on the web. That was back in 1999.
And I think,
that's awesome.
You know, for me, what it was is I had suffered a pretty serious injury in June of 2004, and I was still active duty in the Navy. And they had, instead of, being around where I was getting a lot of attention, I wanted to make sure that I was useful during my recovery time. And I was wearing one of these clamshells. I don't know if you ever seen anybody wear one of those, but it's basically where it makes you be real stiff and straight up for about 3 months. And, so I was in Texas babysitting airplanes. It was 120 degrees outside, and wearing that clamshell was not fun in Texas in the time of year. And obviously it was cooling off, but I spent a lot of time in the hotel room with AC on and on the internet. And I just heard Curry and Dave Weiner talking about this thing. I was like, man, I have got to do this now. And it really was that. And little did I know.
Yeah. Here we are.
Exactly. Oh, so brilliant. I love that.
All right. Go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say, Chris, thanks for coming on and joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a pleasure. Thank you so much. I had a blast.
And Rob, who do we have? Do we have someone lined up for next week?
No, I think we're off next week.
Oh, are we? Are you? Yeah. Oh, you've got something. Yeah, you've got a anniversary or something. Yeah.
It's a birthday, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. So we won't be here next week. But if
well, you have, or you can do a show if you want to. I just won't be here.
It's okay. I will pass. but if you have comments on today's show, you can email Rob or I, and it's Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. And definitely reach out to Chris if you have been in a field to do so. And, of course, go over to her website as well, lifestyleacademy.com. But again, Chris, thanks for being on with us. And for the rest of the audience that's been here, we want to thank you for hanging out with us for the last 90 minutes. Hope you got something out of the show. Definitely, again, please email us in your comments or thoughts. And if you have guest suggestions, please do that as well. But until next time here from the New Media Show, we'll see you. Aloha.
Bye.